Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Hi, all, and welcome back to Reader's Roundtable Podcast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined at the mic, as always, by Mari Garza.
Hello.
And Cheryl Lindemann.
Hello.
And this month, we're also welcoming Mark Neese from our Cattle's Cataloging Department. That's harder to say than I thought it would be. Thanks so much for joining us, Mark.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Welcome. Yes, welcome, Mark.
So this is a little odd for us because this week has been one shifting under us every hour with COVID-19 news and the responses. But we're here.
Yes, we are here.
And we may have kind of accidentally kind of planned the perfect topic to talk about today because we wanted to spend a little time talking about podcasts. So how's everybody doing before we just jump into that?
Okay, I've adjusted to the new reality. I'm a little sad, but yeah. Yeah, we're all here in,
yes,
in varying
yes,
states
yeah,
and
some
forms.
Some
of my events have been canceled that I'm kind of sad about, but that's, yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah, we're just going with sticking with the idea of not large crowds and things like that. And
taking it a day at a time, moment at a time, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, I was feeling a little bit stressed last night. But had a glass of wine, and that helped a little bit. But it's just our new reality now, and I guess we just have to cope as best we can.
If you're, we're not going to go into kind of the details of what Cattle's doing, but if you're kind of curious to figure out how we're handling things here at Cattle, please pay attention to the blog posts on our website. Our director, Scott, will be updating the public as to what Cattle's doing. So stay tuned for that. There's already a post up right now that went up yesterday, and I think there will be updates as pretty much daily for a while as we're figuring things out.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to mention this a little bit more into the podcast, but as these weeks go on, we have a lot of content available on our website. So from downloading books to movies to...
podcasts.
Yeah, to our podcasts.
Yeah.
Access to downloadable music. There's so much content that can be obtained in that way. We do want to encourage people to check that out. And on that note, I did want to mention that we also have online tutorials available from Niche Academy on using quite a few of our resources, including our databases.
So podcasts. I'm actually really new to podcasts. In fact, I'm not sure I really actively listened to them until we'd actually started them here at Cattle. I think the first one I really jumped in on was when I found out that David Tennant, who's a British actor who's in Good Omens and Doctor Who and Broadchurch, was doing a podcast called, conveniently, David Tennant Does a Podcast. It's just a really, like, laid-back, like, conversations and interviews with his friends. And he's like Oscar winner Olivia Colman, who he's on Broadchurch with, Jennifer Garner, who he did a movie with, Whoopi Goldberg, Serene McKellen. It's just a weird, fun list. James Corden from the late shows. It's just one of those fun things that I found and decided, okay, I can try some of these. And it's been an interesting journey kind of trying different ones.
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me to your podcast. I am a big podcast listener. This is Mark, by the way. I'm a big podcast listener. I work in cataloging, which tends to be a rather solitary position. So I started listening to podcasts probably around 2010, 2011. It really helped pass the time. My favorite then and probably still is WTF with Mark Maron. He's, if you're not familiar with Maron, he's kind of a brittle comedian. His personality maybe grates on some people, but he's a very good interviewer, and he's very honest. He's honest about himself, honest about his life. And so I've been a pretty consistent listener to his podcast for a while. He has actors on, comedians, musicians, and they're very in-depth, and he always gets people to say things that they probably wouldn't ordinarily say in a typical interview, which I appreciate. There's some other, I don't want to go too crazy with a long list of podcasts, but there's others that I enjoy, like The Ringer is a media outlet that has lots of podcasts that are quite good. There's the Rewatchables, which has a revolving panel that discusses fun movies to rewatch, like movies that you always see on cable, like Shawshank Redemption. And they're very funny. It's a revolving cast. Then there's the Press Box. Brian Curtis and David Shoemaker of The Ringer discuss journalism, news reporting, and the news for that particular week. And this week, of course, coronavirus was a major topic of discussion. And also there's the Bill Simmons podcast. Bill Simmons is the head of The Ringer, and today he had a very in-depth interview with Malcolm Gladwell about, I guess, the coronavirus, COVID-19, a very in-depth conversation, rather sobering, but not bleak, good information. So do you want me to keep going?
Thanks, Mark.
Jessica,
or, so I like, for me, this is Maddie, I'm kind of like short is good for me, like maybe right around 20 to 25 minutes. I don't know how long in general most podcasts are. I don't listen to a whole lot. Like, there's one I really do follow a lot. But I got started with them by listening to Stuff You Missed in History Class. It's usually very funny. I haven't really listened to it in a while, but I remember this one episode. I was actually traveling in a country where they have a lot of those, I think they call them roundabouts.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, they were talking about the history of, like, how did they get started? Why did they start in these countries? And I, like, immediately got this memory of when I was a kid traveling to Monterrey, Mexico with my parents. We called them Glorietas. And then when I went to Michigan State, I found them there. I don't think they're at Michigan State anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. But
no, they took them all out.
Yeah, I was just like, I remember that. Just, you know, hearing little tidbits about, like, historical things, like how they got started and stuff.
That's cool.
But the one I really love and never miss an episode of, it's actually fairly new. This is only in its second season. It's called This Is Uncomfortable, and it's led by Rima Reis. It's through marketplace.org, which is like a sub of National Public Radio, a business economics show. But it is so funny. And initially I thought it was like really more for like the millennial set, but they have guests from all walks of life. And they basically talk about topics related to money that a lot of people never talk about. You know, when a friend borrows money and they don't pay you back, or, you know, the little tension you have with your parents because you don't save money the way they think you should, or just, it's just super funny. I really like it a lot. But yeah.
All right. Excellent. I would love to listen to more podcasts than I do, and just listening to the ones you both mentioned make me think that I'm missing a lot. It's always that issue of time, watching, listening, or reading. And with my schedule, reading tends to win out a little bit. But there is a show that I have loved for, I don't know how long it's been on, but a very long time. It used to be called Speaking on Faith on National Public Radio. It's changed to On Being. And the host is Krista Tippett. She's written several books as well. But this is also made into a podcast. It's a Peabody Award-winning public radio show and podcast. And it gets to the heart of what does it mean to be human. So she goes everywhere from entertainers, poets, authors, musicians, theologians, philosophers. It runs the gamut. And answering questions of how do we want to live, how will we be to each other? It's pretty deep. That's more my style. I'm Cheryl, I don't know if I said that, but I like that kind of thing. But she's had Ross Gay, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Brené Brown, Richard Rohr, Gregory Orr, poet, Atul Gawande. My absolute favorite episode is a 2015 extremely rare interview with Mary Oliver, the poet, before she died. And it's quite a long interview. It's very in-depth, touches on her life, her inspiration, and she actually reads, Mary Oliver reads the poem Wild Geese out loud. And it's just a beautiful interview. I do encourage our listeners, if you're all interested in Mary Oliver, to listen to it, because she didn't grant that many interviews, so it truly is rare, and it's beautiful. And it gets replayed because of anniversary of Mary Oliver's death. It does get replayed. So that's the podcast that I really connect with the most and have really enjoyed over the years.
It's sort of that one of the things about the podcast is that it ties in very neatly with the books that we're reading. There are book podcasts, just all book podcasts, kind of like ours usually is. There are things that kind of are put out to complement a book. One that I've been listening to, because I was just curious at how it worked out. I talked about reading Catch and Kill, Ronan Farrow's book. Well, there's a podcast that sort of complements it. And it's interesting because it gets a different viewpoint. You know, you've got his version of events. And then within the podcast, he's interviewing, and you get more an in-depth look at some of the characters that helped uncover the Harvey Weinstein story. So like the first one, he's interviewing one of the private investigators who was tailing him.
Oh, wow.
And it's getting their side of the story and how, you know, this is a guy that basically ended up contacting him and giving him help on the story. But his first initial assignment was to be the person tailing Ronan Farrow, and his company was, I think, also tailing his partner. So these things, and then the next one is with his producer, who, if you haven't read the book, you might not know that the story started at, I mean, it's come out kind of in a big way, but the story started at NBC and was killed. Well, he was working with an NBC producer, and so there was the second interview is with that producer who's, you know, discussing how he's like, and they're pretty honest. I mean, it's one of the, and Ronan's pretty honest about his failings. I think that's one of the things I like about it, is that, you know, the producer's like, I wasn't sure I was going to like you. You were just a little intense. But it was, no, it's been a really interesting complement to the actual book and audiobook. And it's, these are all kind of interesting ways to kind of lead into audiobooks if you haven't read audiobooks, or if you enjoy audiobooks, you might try some of these podcasts. Mm-hmm. And we were talking when we were kind of discussing how we were going to do this, that there really is a podcast for everything. You can kind of type in different things. So, like, for example, one of the things that I've enjoyed for new fiction authors, just to kind of identify new fiction authors, is LeVar Burton Reads. Those are like 45 minutes and out to an hour.
Okay,
But it's just taking a short story. It's a little fantasy, sci-fi heavy, but they're really great stories.
Very cool.
I mean, they're just stories that move him, and everything has been really interesting.
For adults, correct?
This is for adults. Tiny Desk Concerts has been a nice way to just find new artists.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, I'm a genealogist in my free time, whatever free time that is. And, you know, there are, like, I six different genealogy podcasts that I would suggest, but one of them would be Generations Cafe, which is a friend of mine does, named Amy Johnson Crow, and it's... That's like not even 30 minutes, usually something in there. And then kind of thinking of your time idea, Madi, there are, within the genealogy community, there are people who put out like tips, like 5-minute, just highlights of things to keep in mind when you're doing research and things. So there really is, it feels like a podcast for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of crossover too. You were talking about Ronan Farrow. He was recently on WTF, Ronan Farrow.
Oh.
He's so smart, and he's so modest.
Yeah.
He's incredibly modest about his achievements, what he's done professionally. And as far as book tie-ins, Mark Maron has a book that's based on his podcast, and that is called, I had it written down. Waiting for the Punch is what the book is called, and I believe Cattle does have it in stock, and it's definitely worth taking a look at. And Mari, you were talking about short podcasts. I'm also kind of a music fan, and I listen to a lot of music podcasts. There's one that I particularly love, and it's called Rock in the Suburbs. It's designed for sort of middle-aged people like myself, people of a certain age who still like music and want to try to keep following it as
long
best they can.
Live the Kinks.
there you go. Yeah. I think they probably had a one or two episodes about the Kinks. But it's about 20 minutes long. It's very short. The guys that do it, Patrick Foster and Jim Lenihan, I've actually gotten to know them on Facebook. and there's a little Facebook community that's developed around the podcast. That's kind of a fun thing about certain podcasts, particularly the smaller ones, is you can get to know the people who do the podcasts as well as some of the fans.
That's cool.
And we've got a little community, and I've Facebook friended several people across the country, and we just kind of geek out together on music. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll pass awesome. The mic.
Yeah, I want to just briefly mention, since we're talking about short, this one actually has not started yet, but I just noticed there was a teaser that got dropped on a podcast called the Story Seeds Podcast. I found it through School Library Journal, but you can find it, you know, in your app store or at storyseeds.co. And it's actually the idea of matching an author with a child who has an idea for a story. And I'm not quite sure how it's going to go or if it's going to be long or not, but it's really designed for kids to listen to with their parents and, you know, kind of churn up, stir up those ideas in their minds for books they'd like to see published or maybe even work with an author. I'm not quite sure. But I recommend that you listen to the 4-minute and 40-second teaser that they just dropped, because there's this one child who gives her idea. It's she's like talking about, I have a story for an electric kitty. She shoots lightning bolts with her paws, and it's just adorable. Listening to all the children speak. I mean, and they are talking about matching, getting authors like Dan Gutman, Chris Grabenstein. I can't quite remember who were some of the other ones on there. But, you know, yeah, just getting conversations going about, you know, seeing stories written and published. But, yeah.
So this is Cheryl again. I wanted to take it back a little step backward into, you know, why do you think people like podcasts? And Mark had actually brought some statistics about podcasts, how many there are, and the listenership. And I wonder if, Mark, if you could share a little bit about that.
Well, I originally heard these stats on the Conan O'Brien podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, but I verified them. There's a website called podcastinsights.com, and they estimate that as of January of 2020, there are 900,000 podcasts and 30 million episodes.
How many million episodes?
30 million now.
30.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's 900,000 that are still active or there have been 900,000 all time.
Wow, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
But when you think about it,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, many seasons of certain podcasts.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
and
even...
obviously, we're not the only country that has a population that creates podcasts.
No, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
And I think this might, I mean, I don't know, I'm just speculating here, but tie into, you know, so many people are listening to earphones or headphones. You look around, you go everywhere you go, and I know, like, on cities and buses and subways and that sort of thing, you see it even more. And we've become such a listening culture. And we're not listening to the Walkman anymore. I mean, there may be some people who are, but we're listening to, you know, other devices, that sort of thing. But I'm wondering if that is how, you know, I'm sure there are books and podcasts about how podcasts started and why and what the appeal is. But some of the appeal factor seems to be, to me, just this headphone listening type culture.
Okay, there is an Audible winner about how to do a podcast. So just so you know, yes, there are.
Right. But, yeah, the appeal factors. I mean, there's so many. My guess is just you can find something about your niche topic. You know, I haven't looked for horse podcasts, but I'm sure they're out there.
Oh, yeah.
Many, 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 you know, that sort of thing. So you can find that niche, and there's so much self, you can create your own content, and I think that makes a big difference, too, mm-hmm. without having to get it published, without having to even try to send it to a publisher and that sort of thing. It's just, it's there.
Oh, yeah.
It's ready.
Yeah. They're so easy to listen to these days, too. I mean, I have a Bluetooth headphones that I wear, or earbuds, whatever you want to call them. You can just listen to them on your phone through different apps like Stitcher or Spotify. And what else? I was going to say something else. I can't remember what it was. Lost my train of thought. Anyway, uncomfortable
but
silence.
Yes, but the ease of access is part of it. And it is, I mean, we can see very clearly in just as we're budgeting for cattle materials that audio is, it's the right. use of audio has increased dramatically over the last couple of years. And I'm podcasts are going to be right along with that because we have become a very, it feels like that's been a way for people to keep up or get new content or.
Yeah, definitely. So just to switch gears a little bit into reading, just a little bit. Sure. You know, this is been a busy week. It's been an intense week, a lot of news, a lot of quick changes. And I'm wondering, you know, if we had some reading goals for the podcast, the collection development librarians, the three of us here, we have reading goals all the time that we're trying to keep up with, to keep up with new material, to keep up with our own reading interests. But, you know, I'm wondering how that's changed this week. I know it has for me personally. One night I couldn't really read at all as much as I tried. I was reading, but I wasn't retaining. And the second night, for some reason, I sort of did finally get into my book. And it was really nice to have that experience again. And I think that is going to affect, you know, when we're facing, you know, difficult times in our communities, our reading habits do change. And we've talked about that a little bit before, but I know we even had a podcast before I was on about comfort reads and that sort of thing. But sometimes I think we go back to our favorite genres, favorite types of topics. Some people are reading lists about books about history, about you know, big health crises in history, and that is something that is also trending and very popular. Everybody responds to these types of times differently, and that's okay. And however we do it is the way that works for us.
Yeah. Speaking of, last night I got no reading done. I was just like it went in spurts where, you know, I was just kind of going through all the news articles and trying to figure out, and then. I had determined, well, I guess I'm going to have to read early this morning so I can feel ready for what I want to mention. But again, I woke up and I went to the site and I'm like, oh, that's it. I just cannot look at these sites. I really want to read. And once I got into it, I was really glad I did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting how lots of distractions out there, but especially given what's happened with the news regarding COVID.
I'm finding I'm picking things up, starting them, putting them down. I guess I'm trying to find it's a mix of things. I have also spent too much time reading articles that aren't helping necessarily. There is somebody recently tweeted a new rule for myself. I'm going to only check certain sites twice a day, and that's it, because I can't handle all the in between. Yeah. And I kind of get that. I can also say that in some ways. Part of me kind of wandering around is that I've read two really good books, and it's sort of coming
hangover.
Out of that and trying. Yes, it is. It is totally book hangover.
The book hangover is so hard.
And it's you know it's comfort reading. They're two fantasies, and they're really hopeful fantasies. If that I'm going to say something about them. One of them, because they both release. Right about now. One of them is N.K. Jemisin's The City We Became, which came out of the story, The City Born Great. And it's sort of a big, giant love letter to New York. It's the first of a new trilogy. It's in her world, in her story, cities, once they kind of hit a threshold and they come to life.
Ooh.
They develop a soul, and there's an avatar for them. And when New York hits that point, New York is born, and each of the five boroughs gets an avatar to help out.
Wow.
So there is this group of six people who represent all of New York, and when these cities are born, there is something that kind of tries to stop it from happening, and there is a kind of underlying evil. It's like it's an urban fantasy. There's an underlying evil that's trying to stop and trying to drag the boroughs off it's a weird sort of a play on a Lovecraftian horror, but also really it's the love-hate relationship with New York. It's all the good and all the bad, and the people that don't want to talk to people, the people that are rude, the people that are fabulously supportive, the people that feel like they have to you know, this is the borough that has to take care of itself. We can't depend on the rest of the boroughs. It's really interesting the way she plays with as a New Yorker, the way she plays with the different parts. Right. But it's just, it's, she writes so well, and it's one of those things I couldn't put down. And the other one I've told Cheryl about is The House in the Carulian Sea by T.J. Klune. And this is like, it's just sweet. It's a by-the-book caseworker is sent to look in on and investigate on anything but normal orphanage. And it's a fun and funny kind of fantasy romance. A lot of humor. Linus is the caseworker. He's assigned to investigate a magical orphanage. We're talking about a setup where there's magic in the world, but those people that have it are kind of segregated and treated as other. And in this orphanage, the inhabitants are a really grumpy gnome, a teen who, when he gets startled, turns into a Pomeranian, a something. Nobody quite knows what he is, but there must be some jellyfish in there. He's the sweetest little guy on the planet, and he just wants to become a bellhop. And this is a character you never know you knew you wanted, but he is the sweetest thing on the planet. And then there's like a forest sprite, a wyvern, and a six-year-old called Lucy, who's probably the son of Satan. And all Linus just wants to make sure that everybody's home and safe and loved, and he's not sure how this can possibly work because all these people are really dangerous. But they also are really fun and really funny. And if you like fans of Neil Gaiman or Terry Pratchett or Seanan MacGuire, anybody, it was just a fun, sweet read. So
it has a great cover.
It does have a great cover.
I was drawn to it. And then Jessica's like, well, let me tell you about it.
It is weird, but
not
lovely.
Not usually much of a fantasy reader, but this one actually appeals to me. It seems really people-based.
Yes, yeah. Totally.
And the setting also plays a big role in it,
yes,
too, because it's very beautiful. And,
yes, yeah. And Linus is from kind of a gray, it feels like a London-type area, and like always rainy, always gray. And when he's sent out to this orphanage, it's right on the edge of the sea, and it's sunny. It becomes sunny before he gets there on the train. And then when he gets there, yes, he recognizes the Carulian Sea and and the beauty on the island. And yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Did you want to share anything that you've been reading, Mark?
Yeah, sure. I'm not nearly as prolific a reader as you, I don't think. Which is rather sad, but yeah,
okay.
It's true. But I've read a couple recent books. One is called No Place I'd Rather Be. It's about the baseball writer, Roger Angel. It's written by Joe Bonomo, who is a English professor at Northern Illinois University. And Roger Angel is not only a great baseball writer, but just a great writer in general. He's been writing professionally since the 40s, and he's been writing about baseball since 1960. He's almost 100 years old, so I think he's just about near retirement, finally. But no, he's a great writer, truly a great writer. His ability to describe things is reminds me of John Updike.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just incredible way of visualizing things in a way that you read it and go, I would never think of that in a million years. That's just brilliant. So if you're a baseball fan, I recommend that. And another book I read recently is kind of a lighter fare. It's called Sympathy for the Drummer, Why Charlie Watts Matters. It's about the drummer Charlie Watts of the Rolling Stones.
Cool.
And the writer is Mike Edison. And it's written in kind of a gonzo, hipstery fashion, so your mileage may vary on that style of writing, but it's pretty breezy. If you're a music fan, Rolling Stones fan, I'd highly recommend picking it up. You'd be able to crank it out in a couple of days. So those are my suggestions.
Sounds good. Thank you. All right. How about you, Maddie?
So I just want to remind everyone, March is reading month.
Yeah.
Kids all over are celebrating this incredible skill that we have to help us not just do better in school, obviously, but to broaden life and broaden the world. So I've got some books that I'm reading also to celebrate Women's History Month. One of them is called Suffragette, The Battle for Equality by David Roberts. And you might know his name because he is the illustrator of Rosie Revere Engineer and Ada Twist, Scientist by Andrea Beatty. These two have worked together, and they've done some wonderful collaboration celebrating STEM themes, science themes, just very passionate and, you know, really give great messages about perseverance to kids. But in this book, he, and I'll say that this is kind of a hefty book. it's a nonfiction title, and I feel like I recommend parents reading it with their kids, even if your kid is already reading on their own, because it really gives the opportunity for kids and parents to talk about history and talk about the women's suffrage movement. I mean, David Roberts said that when he was in middle school, he learned, like, just kind of matter-of-factly, because it wasn't like a lesson in school or a section in his curriculum, but he, you know, he learned that women didn't always have the right to vote. And that's what kind of got him on this quest to write, research this topic. And I have to say, the book kind of, he's based in England, and the book kind of goes back and forth between the history of the women's suffrage movement in the United Kingdom and the United States. But I at first was like, oh, I wish it was just the United States, but you get so much out of it when you learn how intertwined the two are, you know, and how both of them influenced each other. But that is one that I have been trying to get through. I'm almost done with that one. But the other one I really recommend, it's called Equality's Call, The Story of Voting Rights in America. And it's actually more of a general book about voting in America. And it's actually by Deb Deason, which we all know is a local author. She lives in Grand Ledge area, I think.
I worked with her for many years.
Yes, and she is a former Cattle employee. But, wow, it's just, she's just a really great person who does, puts together rhymes for kids. And I really liked it because, I mean, it's not exhaustive, but she just kind of gives all these pictures for different groups of people in our history who have really had to fight to get their full privilege of writing. And one of the refrains that she uses quite often is equality's call. But we heard in the distance, equality's call, a right isn't right till it's granted to all. So she repeats this somewhat throughout the book. It's illustrated by Magdalena Mora, and she's just really an outstanding writer, Deb, and I really like the illustrations as well. Let's see. One more that's sort of related to suffrage actually is, it's called Saving Savannah by Tanya Bolden. She actually started her world writing, it's a historical fiction for young adults, and Tanya Bolden wrote about upper-class African-American persons in the Washington, D.C. area. And she started this with her book called, I think it was called Inventing Victoria. So this is kind of like a follow-up maybe to it, but it involves a character. Her name is Savannah, and the title that I'm recommending is Saving Savannah by Tanya Bolden. She's kind of getting bored with life. She's beginning to think a lot about privilege and all the extra things she gets when she sees other African-Americans in her community. And she meets someone who helps her to get on a path of working for social justice and working to better the lives of other people. Really interesting, very well researched. I actually listened to that one and really, really enjoyed it. I have one more, but I'll let you guys go ahead, jump in.
As a side note, my great-grandma was a suffragist.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Back in Detroit. She didn't get married until she was 37, so she was a spinster, as they used to refer to them. But that book sounds great. I wish I knew more about what exactly she did, because I don't think it's well documented.
Yeah.
No.
And I've actually tried to find, you know, primary documents, and with not a lot of success.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it's a part of American history that's not nearly talked about as much as it should be. So,
right,
that sounds like a great book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wanted to mention probably my last contribution here, but piece to this particular podcast, but what I'm most looking forward to reading next. And I've seen a couple really great books released in the last 2 weeks. And of course, because of our world and what we're all going through right now, they're not getting quite the push that they would have gotten had we been in a more normal, shall I say, news cycle. And the one that actually released this week that I'm most excited about is Recollections of My Non-Existence. This is a memoir by Rebecca Solnit, who is the author of over 15 books, but most notably, I think probably one of her better titles too, is called Men Explain Things to Me. And that book is actually based on a true story that you can look up of an occurrence that happened in her life. It resulted in an article and a lot of discussion about a new term called mansplaining. But Rebecca Solnit's memoir takes her back to her, you know, talks about her life in San Francisco, her young adult life, and really, really looking forward to that book. And so that's my next must-read book. How about you, Jessica?
Like I said, I've kind of been bumping around. There's so many things I'm excited about. They're kind of later releases in the year. But with everything that's going on right now, those might be the comfort. I have kind of advanced reading copies of some of them, and I might be just diving on that instead of some of the things maybe I should for work be reading first. But so for example, I've talked about the Murderbot series, which has been a set of novellas from Tor. It's about the artificial intelligence security unit that has hacked its control system and now just kind of freelances and wants to watch TV in most of its spare time. Well, it's the first book is All Systems Red by Martha Wells. They're just really great, fun novellas. And the first novel is actually going to be released in the summer, and that's probably where I'm going next because I think I need that right now. They're usually a good mystery, a fair amount of humor because Murderbot, and if you haven't read it, you just got to read it to kind of get an idea. Just imagine a giant security unit, robot-looking thing or cyborg-looking thing that really just doesn't want to deal with humans and would rather be watching. It's essentially telenovelas. That's what it enjoys, is that kind of TV show. And it would rather just be binge-watching that than dealing with humans in general.
You know, I said this, but that would be my last segment, but that you made me think, you know, right now, I think to encourage all of our listeners, read what you want right now.
Oh, seriously.
If it's a pile of magazines and that's your favorite read, no one is judging what you're reading.
Listen to what you want.
Reading.
Take time for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be this act of self-care and really just reading things, maybe reading about epidemics is the thing that's making you feel better. Reading about science. I mean, there's so many different ways to approach this.
Yeah.
I am currently reading Why We Swim by Bonnie Sui. It's actually releasing in April, so it's an ARC that I'm reading right now, an advanced reading copy. But this is a deep dive, to use a bad pun, if you will, into swimming, into all of, you know, different stories of people swimming. And it gave me this really nice kernel of hope, this feeling about swimming this summer, you know. And it reading can kind of put you mentally in so many places, as we know. And again, people, not everybody reads for that reason, but for me, I thought, okay, I can't wait to read this summer, you know. And it places you sort of mentally into the future, and sometimes that's what you need at that moment.
I will say, I almost said this earlier, but I'm going to say it now. I had been talking about LeVar Burton reads, and you know, pieces include N.K. Jemisin, who I talked about, Saladin Ahmed, who's a Dearborn area author. But one of the recent picks is something called Endgame by Nancy Kress. And it might appeal to anybody who's like wants to lean in on the pandemic reading. I mean, and don't be ashamed or afraid to do that if that's what interests you.
Yeah, it's really popular. Have noticed holds increase on movies and books on all of those lists. So that is a way that some people, that's the choice. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm just going to mention two more books very quickly. One of them is called Accordion Lee. It's
which is a fabulous book.
By Michael Genhart. And I had noticed this book a while ago, but I hadn't really been able to get a hold of it until recently. And it's so cute. It's about a boy who has these two grandfathers. I think one of them has maybe Swiss background, yes, and the other one is Mexican background. So it's abuelo and opa. And these two men cannot speak to each other, like when they do have family gatherings. And the little boy comes up with the idea, hey, you both play the accordion, let's bring them out together. And it's just a beautiful story of how they end up interacting with each other and getting to know each other. Because if anyone has been in a situation where you don't speak the other person's language, sometimes it's kind of silent and awkward and you just don't know how to move on with getting to know someone. So it's really, really funny. And then a Jay Fiction book that I really want to recommend. It's so funny, Revenge of the Red Club by Kim Harrington. And this is about a middle schooler who's kind of a reporter in her school. And she has this club that she didn't form. It was formed before I think she was became a middle schooler. But it's kind of a club for girls that get together to talk about menstruation and the things that go with it. And it's kind of like a place to have, a sounding board place to ask questions, to discuss things. But in the story, the school administration decides that they want to shut down the club for various reasons. I mean, there's a mean bully. And I just have to say that when I was in middle school, those kind of topics were not discussed in the open. And I find the book really, really refreshing that girls can begin talking about normal biological things, and I hope boys do too. So it's a really funny read. First three chapters, I was just out loud, just like, oh my gosh, this is so funny. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, I think that's our episode for today. Thank you all. Thank you, Mark, for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks again.